open the works, or welcome to House Revenue. I'll open the work session on House Bill 2082, the transportation package, and ask the folks who are here from Yamhill County to come forward. Good morning, Representative Lewis.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Committee, for the record, I'm Leslie Lewis, and I'm the state representative from District 29. I come to you today, and with me is Dave Hogeberg, who chairs our Parkway Committee in Yamhill County, and George Lewis, who is our city administrator in Dundee. And we come to you today to talk to you about a very serious traffic problem that we have in our county. For those of you who have been through beautiful Yamhill County, you've probably experienced 99W going through the cities of Newburgh and Dundee. And we have, I would say, approaching 30,000 cars a day on that stretch of the road. And we have serious traffic congestion. And our area has been in need for some time of a bypass around Newburgh and Dundee. And we've been working on that. In 1995, we took a very serious step, we thought, to us. We came before the legislature and asked you to pass a toll legislation so that we could build a toll road. We did pass that in 1995, and to date, we have done some of the work. We've done a feasibility study, and we've done the beginnings of, or we did the alternative study that needed to be done preparatory to the environmental impact study. But we are fast going to lose options, as many communities are, with being able to acquire right-of-way because of development that is going on in our area. It's going to reduce the options we have for the three alternatives that we can currently move forward into the EIS. And we desperately need to get this project off the ground. We have raised, and Dave can tell you more about this, over $600,000 locally, plus, it does include federal money that our Congresswoman Furs got us in the earmarked T21 funds. But we've raised that money to do the EIS. And we desperately need to move forward with this project. And for those of you who know me and know me well, you know that I don't come to you lightly supporting a tax increase. In fact, to date, I don't believe I have ever voted for a tax increase on the floor of the House. But I'm here today to tell you that I will support House Bill 2082. And the reason why I'm supporting House Bill 2082 is specifically, I do believe in the 4-cent package for the cities and the counties. We do have needs in our local areas. But the thing that really attracts me to House Bill 2082 is the 2-cent bonding package, which will fund the unfunded projects on the B list, what has been so-called the B list. And I strongly urge you to move this package forward, not just for my community, but for all of the $500, $600, $700 million worth of projects that to date have been unfunded. These are serious needs we have in the state of Oregon, and I think every district will benefit from this 2-cent bonding package, and I would urge you to move forward with whatever the DAC 18 amendments or whatever they are now.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is George Lewis. I'm the city administrator in Dundee. I bring you greetings from our city council in Dundee. They get to discuss on a regular basis the traffic problems through Dundee. Our community has been trying a different approach to engage its citizens, and one of the very strong messages that we received during our visioning process, during our efforts to address livability in our community is to bring to this committee our concern about what is happening in Dundee. Our small city has a police department and a fire department in terms of handling those 3,000 cars a day that Representative Lewis talked about. We get to respond to over 350 accident calls in about a 3-mile stretch each year. And that's not because people are going too fast on a stretch, because, as you may know, it is not possible to go very fast through Dundee on a Friday night or a Saturday or even a Sunday evening. But the accidents do occur, some of them are very serious, and it affects the livability of our community, not only from the standpoint of how it affects our residents, but also how it affects our visitors. This accident problem, the livability issue, was highlighted in a 1998 traffic safety study that was done at the request of the city, mainly as a result of the speed control issue. And that study points out that the accident rate through Dundee for a similar stretch of state highway is twice the current rate of a similar highway. Our city council has discussed the various aspects of legislation in terms of House Bill 2082, and we would like to lend our support to an amended version of that bill, which would help generate revenues through a toll process that would build a new modern highway that would alleviate, would take most of the traffic flow off of the existing highway. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Hagerberg. I'm the chair of the Yamhill County Official Transportation Committee that deals with the Highway 9918 traffic congestion. I won't repeat what's been said. Let me tell you that we have worked for years in Yamhill County, as have people in Clatsop County and Deschutes County and lots of places, trying to put together packages for major transportation projects. By that I mean $50, $100 million projects, and there hasn't been the funding available to build but maybe one in every 3 or 4 years, and there's a desperate need to fund a lot of those. We think that 2082 puts together a package that can move a large number of projects forward, not just in Yamhill County. We think it makes sense to go ahead and to bond those projects and build them while you can at today's costs. And so it is with that purpose and with all the support we've had in our county and our efforts towards the toll legislation that we would support 2082. We tell you that we've worked hard on toll legislation because we think it also brings additional revenues on a pay-as-you-use basis that are important in the future of transportation. And this bill would provide the shortfall that would fund that Newburgh-Dundee project. As an example, the Newburgh-Dundee project would pay somewhere between 45 and 50% of the bonding costs of debt service by toll revenue. It's that shortfall that you have to fund, and 2082 would move that forward, and we feel that that's a critical part of bringing not only the benefits of all this construction, but to start pilot projects, if you will, with respect to tolling. There are three other projects that have been authorized in the toll legislation. One is Puyallup and Sherwood, one is the Longview Rainier Bridge, and a project in the Metropolitan Portland. So we would urge your support. It brings a lot of benefits, we think, to Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Are there any questions? Let me just ask you, since we passed the 95 legislation, you certainly had time to go back to the communities and talk about this conference. What's the reaction being specifically to the toll component in the local communities?
We have not had any, sometimes you pass legislation, then you go home and find out what the reaction is. Before we passed or came to you with the legislation in 1995, we had gone out and talked to the community. We had signatures by over 4,000, well, 8,000, but 4,000 of them dealing specifically saying we would support legislation that would bring alternative methods of funding highway projects, such as tolling. So we did that homework before. And we've got editorials from newspapers in support of this type of legislation. The people in Yamhill County would tell you, if it's a toll road or no road, we want a toll road.
And as I recall, the discussion at that time was that the toll would essentially be optional, because people could still, if they want, choose to drive through the town on the highway without having the benefit of having the uninterrupted travel. But most people would probably choose to pay the dollar or whatever it is to be able to go a lot faster.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I think that's correct. People recognize in Newburgh and Dundee they will have a choice. If you just can't abide with tolls, you can continue to use the existing route. But the studies that we've seen done, people, when they have to, a choice, we think, are going to opt for the toll payments. There are studies that will give you the scientific methods of how many will and won't, and that's how they derive that approximate 45% payment for the tolls.
Is there also general agreement as far as where the alignment should go with the community?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's one of the issues, and Representative Lewis mentioned we have completed an alternative study in this process, which brings us down to three alternatives, and it will be necessary for these dollars to come forward to move that study forward. The local community has raised, in addition to $375,000 of federal money, over $225,000 or $230,000 of the local monies from the communities and so forth to move the EIS forward. It is that EIS that will identify which of the three or four routes would go forward, and the fourth would be a no build or a no action.
Jay Rasmussen?
Have you, maybe I'm looking too far down the road, have y'all spent any time thinking about variable pricing based on time of day or little boxes that, you know, you see you don't have to stop at the toll booth? Have you thought about any of those kinds of mechanics?
Chair, Representative Rasmussen, we have considered that. One of the things that you find is it does bring some forms of alternative pricing. For example, at 3 o'clock in the morning when there's one car every 30 minutes, you'd probably close the toll booth, so you wouldn't do that. And on peak hours, the tolls may very well be different than they would in being alternative hours, so that could very well happen. And it would include the automatic toll. You know, you get the little transponder that you can get so that you don't have to stop. It would be an automated system like that. That's what's anticipated.
Okay. Other questions? We thank you all for coming in today. Especially good to see the co-chair here. So we'll take your considerations very seriously. Okay, I'm going to suspend the public hearing on House Bill 2082, and then we'll move into, the work session on 2082. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2039. And Paul, would you tell us where we are with this and what we have in front of us?
Mr. Chair, 2039 came from the Interim Revenue Committee at the behest of Association of Oregon Counties. There was a hearing on it in late March, and basically what the bill does is sets up a revenue department with the authority to establish a list of property tax expenditures, whereas property tax expenditures would include any exemptions or special assessments enacted by the legislature. County assessors then certify the impact of those property tax expenditures on their counties. The bill also sets up an account called the Property Tax Expenditure Funding Account. General fund dollars are appropriated to that account, so the bill does have a subsequent ways and means. In terms of bills that have gone through, probably the best example that have come through the House Revenue Committee, as House Bill 2050 would fit into this category as having an impact on local property tax revenue.
Mr. Chair, which one is 2050?
Oh, I'm sorry. 2050 is intangible.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah.
I thought those numbers were stamped in your mind.
We also have a -1 amendment to the bill. And the -1 amendments do a couple of things. The major one is to set a 50% reimbursement rate under Section 2 there. New property tax expenditure requires a 50% allocation from this property tax expenditure funding account. It also makes it clear that the schools are excluded from this calculation.
And what would be the impact of the other 2079 mm-hmm. pass, which gave essentially a local option? Would the state be on the hook for those property tax expenditures as well under this bill?
My interpretation, Mr. Chair, is that it would not. It would be a local option.
well members. I know the counties have been talking to you all about this. So let's talk about it. Is anybody got a problem with the bill? Got a problem with the dash ones?
Mm-hmm. Have we gone through the dash ones?
We did just briefly just a second ago. Do you have any specific questions about
them? I mean, who brings them to us?
Well, who suggested the amendment?
Representative Welsh, who's come from the from Gilroydale and from
the counties
and counties.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman,
Representative Sheridan.
Does this have a ways and means referral now, or I assume it will need one? If it doesn't, I don't see a fiscal impact statement on this.
Correct.
It does have a ways and means.
Okay. So we would pass it from here to ways and means, and then there we go.
And one other thing, Mr. Chairman.
I don't know whether we want to do it here or at some point. I'm not sure that it's entirely clear that the local property tax options would be exempt from this, although I think it's fair that they would be if the legislature is giving counties the special taxing districts the authority to create options for themselves. This just says that if a new property tax expenditure is created, I don't know. I wonder if Dexter could...
Or maybe Gil could tell us if he had that in mind.
Watch the door, everybody.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Gil with the Association of Oregon County. I don't believe we anticipated that this would cover local option programs that that are delegated to local districts. Moreover, if there's another issue that may come up about sunsets. I think that if an existing property tax expenditure is sunsetted and the sunset is reinstituted, that's something you may want to talk about, too, in terms of this.
And your opinion on that? Is it if the state extends a sunset that it would qualify? Is that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we understand that... this is a primarily salutary benefit. There are a couple of major loopholes, obviously. One is that the new fund that's created could be underfunded. And secondly, any new exemptions could be done notwithstanding this. Our purpose here, though, this is really in line with the Governor's Tax Review Policy Advisory Committee of the interim, chaired by Ron Tempe. They recommended as a short-term matter referral of full reimbursement, referral of constitutional amendment to fully reimburse the revenue losses from new expenditures. What we would like to see with this and with the Dash 1 amendments is an institutionalization of the a more thoughtful process in terms of reviewing and consideration of new expenditures. Generally, this committee done a really fine job with that, and but I've found in my 7 sessions working in the legislature that the way committee operates can depend quite a good deal on personality, the mixtures of personalities, and this particular committee has a very fine mixture. What we've discovered is that it would be, I think, result in better policy to have this more thoughtful approach institutionalized on the in statute. So the bill has some shortcomings. Obviously, it's not going to require particular action every time. But we believe it's a decent place to start.
Sort of like the unfunded mandates that makes you think twice before you take action. That's the concept.
Any questions?
Maybe getting.
I'm willing to support the National Amendments at any time.
Okay. Representative Merkley, do you have a question?
Yes. How did you settle on 50%?
Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley, political practicality, I think, is one answer. Another answer is that local governments assume that we're going to be full partners with you in determining appropriate tax policy, particularly as it relates to property tax expenditures. If there is a worthy property tax expenditure, it makes sense that all governments, all local governments and the state share in the cost of that. If we're full partners in your decision making, then it makes sense that we would share in the expense of a new worthy property tax expenditure.
Mr.
Chair,
I think it's appropriate. You know, you look at like the historic property tax exemption. We did see from counties and cities support to maintain that, for instance. Obviously, that had an impact on, a positive impact on livability and sense of local history and those issues, and that's something that we create at the state level, but that counties and local cities benefit from the impact that has on their communities. So I think that the 50-50 sharing that's contemplated in the Dash 1 Amendment, while it's hard to... You can't identify a mathematical formula that supports that as being the precise percentage. I think it represents a sharing of ownership of some of those tax benefits as well as the burdens that come from the tax expenditures. I think Gil does raise another interesting question, though, about sunsets and how those apply when we're talking here about a new property tax expenditure or existing property tax expenditure expanded, and I don't know where sunsets come in under that. Extending sunsets.
Mm-hmm. You answered that question, but I don't remember exactly what you said.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I did answer it precisely. We, of course, would like to have it covered, but I think it's more important to have this bill on the books. So whatever I guess adjustments that you need to Dash 1s, we're open to.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt. Gail, in reading the Dash 1 amendments, it doesn't seem to make any distinction as to if the property tax expenditure is made through an optional process that the local government has the option of expanding a property tax expenditure or creating a new one, or if the legislature, in effect, imposes this property tax expenditure upon local government. Am I reading that correctly, that it does not differentiate between those two situations?
Here, Representative Witt, there is an ambiguity on that point. It probably would be worthwhile to have that language clarified.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Hillary.
Oh, this going to Ways and Means and being a House bill, I suppose it's time to get this thing on the road. And I know with the Chair's consent, Ways and Means can make substantive amendments. And I would be willing to move this on to... Ways and Means, with the understanding that you might follow up on those issues of the sunset and the local options. And in fact, with that, Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 Amendments to House Bill 2039.
Representative Shetterly moves the Dash 1 Amendments to House Bill 2039. I would just add that is a good suggestion, and that's certainly something that I'll be happy to do, to point out that we want the bill to specify that if it's a local option, it does not... This provision does not go into effect, and if it's an extension of a sunset, it does not go into effect. We're talking about newly created programs. Everybody okay with that? Any more discussion on the Dash 1s? Any objection? Adopted.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Bill. Representative Rasmussen.
Move House Bill 2039 as amended to Ways and Means with the DuPass recommendation.
Representative Rasmussen moves House Bill 2039 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a DuPass recommendation. Any more discussion? Please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2039, go to Ways and Means, the DuPass recommendation. And we'd like to encourage them to move quickly on the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 2039 and reopen work session on House Bill 2082 and 3344. Members, we have a couple of more details to, as always, in bills this of this magnitude. So we're not planning to move these today, but my hope is we can get everything ironed out satisfactorily so that they can both come up for consideration and move tomorrow. And we're getting very close to the end. Dick, do you want to start on what we have here?
Okay. Morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Glad you're hearing both of these bills together, because when I get confused, I'll be talking about the right subject no matter which bill.
That's right.
We do have from the contractor now a summary report of the Oregon Highway Cost Allocation Study. We had asked him to provide us an executive summary at least, and then told him what we wanted in it, which was more than he planned to put in an executive summary. So he's released this as a summary report somewhere between an executive summary and the final report.
So what's, I always wonder about that. The executive summary is sort of like a three-point page, and if you get more information than that, does that make your CEO summary? I mean the...
Make your technician.
Oh, okay.
We do have, I just got this morning, a table of contents and a list of exhibits, which I'll include in future copies, but I didn't get that done last night. Basically, it goes through the purpose and scope and a description of the study, and then talks about the results. We can sort of look at them, I think, in the tables, in the exhibits. Exhibit 1 is essentially taking all vehicles, whether or not they're full fee-paying vehicles, and looking at the cost that they occasion, the cost that they impose, or that can be allocated to the different types of vehicles from the SIP, the State Highway Improvement Plan, and allocating those to the different vehicles. What you find for construction, if you're looking, you've got new pavement rehabilitation, new bridge, you've got a heavy vehicle percent for each one of those. You'll see it's very high in pavement rehabilitation at 74. Bridges tend to be somewhat lower with respect to the heavy vehicle share as grading and other. Total construction, 41.8. You add in the other costs. He talks about how some of those are allocated in proportion to some of the construction costs or in proportion to the heavy vehicle share for motor carrier administration costs and for central administration costs. You end up overall with a 38.8 heavy vehicle share. Okay, so with the costs, the heavy vehicles are essentially responsible for 38.8% of the cost in the SIP. And turning to the next page, then Exhibit 2, you have a breakdown of the administrative costs or administration and other costs into the various categories. The total there of $121 million I thought was a little large to show as other, and so had the contractor break that out in the finest categories that he could. And so you can see where some of those costs are. Transportation development there is primarily preliminary engineering and engineering costs. Capital construction is not construction of the roads, but construction of facilities that are used, such as maintenance yards, administration buildings, and so on. Motor carrier administration, all of those costs are assigned to heavy vehicles. They are the cost of administering the weight mile tax primarily, and heavy vehicle registration fees. So you end up there with a heavy vehicle share of 42.1%.
Exhibit of that category.
Of that category, right. The administrative cost.
Right.
Table 3 is similar, or Exhibit 3, excuse me, is similar to Exhibit 1, except it deals only with the portion of user fees which are collected by the state, weight mile taxes, registration fees, and fuel taxes, which are further redistributed to local government. So it's not all expenditures by local government. It's expenditures of those monies that they receive from the state in the way of highway user fees. And there you see a much lower heavy vehicle percent, partially because of the nature of the activities they're involved in, but more significantly because of the lower truck VMT on city streets. Okay. Then on the unnumbered next page, the discussion begins about the revenue attribution, and again we get into now considering full fee paying vehicles and vehicles which are granted a subsidy to some extent. Significant classes, there are public vehicles, federal vehicles, and a number of city and some county and some state vehicles are not paying taxes to the registration fees or fuel taxes, diesel fuel taxes. To the extent that flat fees would be in the current rates at which flat fees are issued, to the extent that they're not collecting the full share as computed by the model, that would also be treated as a subsidy. The first table, Exhibit 4, deals with the total revenues before any treatment of subsidy. And there you find we had in Exhibit 1 a heavy vehicle share at 38.8. And you see they're paying 38.4%.
Mm-hmm.
So they're slightly under their share. Okay. I was trying to see how 5 is different than 4, but it's just summary data. In 4, you've got this broken out by tax. In 5, you've got the vehicle miles of travel for reference, and then you've got total user revenue and cost responsibility, and you compute the cost responsibility shares, and there again you see that overall it's close to 1, and even on the unadjusted cost responsibility ratios, but then when you adjust it so that you make revenues, total revenues across all vehicles with total cost responsibility the same. The adjusted cost responsibility ratios again show that 0 to 8,000 are what we call basic vehicles are paying slightly over at 1.01, and heavy vehicles in the third from the bottom line pay 99, slightly under their cost responsibility share. Moving then to Exhibit 6. We're looking now only at full-paying vehicles. So what we do is, or what the contractor does is to subtract out all VMT from vehicles which receive full or partial tax subsidies, and then also subtract out the partial payments from the revenue side for those vehicles. And looking at vehicles that are not subsidized in any way, they're full-paying vehicles, you see the cost responsibility share is 37.5. And the revenue paid by those vehicles is 38%. So they are, in fact, paying more than their cost responsibility share. That's the full-paying vehicle. And if you move to Exhibit 7, then, we're talking about the full fee-paying vehicles, but then we're allocating the subsidy that exists, and we're allocating it by VMT. Again, this was contrary to what the contractor felt was the best way to do it, but he followed the dictates, in this case, of the study review team that was set up. He would have allocated that in proportion to cost responsibility so that the overall cost responsibility would have remained 37.5, the same as it is for full fee-paying vehicles. But allocating it by VMT with about 93% of the VMT accounted for by basic vehicles, most of the subsidy is paid for then by automobiles. And what happens is the cost responsibility share drops to 36.2. The user revenue share is 38, and so you have about a 5% overpayment there by heavy vehicles, about a 3% underpayment by light vehicles.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
I'm sorry, I lost you on this last one. Were you on Exhibit 8?
Seven.
Also on 7.
You can look either in the cost responsibility ratios there, revenue to cost ratios, or in the dollar amounts in the first section of the table there. If you look under user revenues, come down to the bottom, you see that the heavy vehicles are paying 38%. Their cost responsibility in the next column is 36.2. And then if you move over to the adjusted revenue to cost ratios, again, moving to the top line, the 0 to 8,000 are basic vehicles paying 97%. The revenues are 97% of the cost that they're responsible for. And in the next to the last number in that column is 1.05, heavy vehicles paying 5% more than their cost responsibility. The next section moves into the rates. The contractor was asked to, given his study, provide rates for the weight mile pass, the road use assessment fee, and the flat fees. In the Exhibit 8, you have the recommended weight mile taxes based primarily on a single number without any axle differential. What came out of the model is that's the original curve that was fitted, and then that curve is used as a base to array the rates over the axle differential. So the new recommended rates there range from 63 mils, as we talked about it, or if the contractor talked about it, 6.3 cents per mile. For the 26 to 28,000 pound category, moving down to the 78 to 80,000 category, which is dominant in terms of where the trucks are, our current rate is 13.6. So that's down 1.25 cents per mile.
Mr. Chair.
Zane Rickley.
What drove the distinction between the recommended rates of March 4th and the current recommended rates?
Review, I would say, by John Maris and myself and a number of people with respect to what the contractor was doing, some adjustments to the vehicle miles of travel, some changes in the way subsidies were allocated. The original calculations did not pick up subsidies paid by basic vehicles. Got those cleaned up, and essentially that's what happened with the changes. Then in Exhibit 9, the rates essentially in Exhibit 8 are spread, and there the contractor is relying essentially on the load factors as determined by the NAPCOM model, the National Pavement Cost Allocation Model, because you're primarily dealing with pavement damage, wear to the pavements, and so what you're doing is trying to spread those rates out and sort of get the numbers close to the cost responsibility calculated actually for different types of vehicles. The data would be for like single unit two-axle trucks, single unit three-axle trucks, and combination trucks, and various categories of trucks. And so, you know, associated with those, you have different axle combinations. And it's that data that's used to essentially spread this out. And this table provided. It was a bit of a surprise for the contractor, but when the bill came out of House Transportation, it extended these differentials down. In current law, they only are above 80,000. The bill that came out of the House extended them down to 26,000. So we got those spread all the way down to 28,000, so now the axles run from 2 to 9 plus. Exhibit 10 is the road use assessment fee. Current law is based on 5.2 cents per EFL. And as I noted the other day, the EFL is kind of something which is moving, I think, into history. Where you're using now the NAPCOM model, essentially, to estimate the effect of axle loads on pavement wear. And so the contractor is suggesting we move away from that single number related to EFLs and move to a table which does spread the road use assessment fee based on both weight and the number of axles that are on the road. Now, what's needed in this type of table, actually, for the motor carrier division, is a very, very big table. It runs up to like 20 axles or over and up to maybe 400,000 pounds, and in special cases even above that. And so what the contractor is recommending is that basically the tools that he used to make this spreader available to ODOT, and he's recommending that rather than put it in statute that ODOT, in fact, create the table, which would be used for loads and axle combinations outside the table. Then in Exhibit 11, we have some adjustments to the registration fees for vehicles below 26,000 pounds. Again, there's no weight mile tax to vary at that point, so the only tool that's available to achieve cost responsibility is the registration fee. They pay whatever they pay under the fuel tax, and the only way to move them toward cost responsibility is to adjust the registration fee. And so he's recommending some, you know, sort of change in the structure here, which involves increases at the lowest area. There's some discussion in there about how he gets to 25 per basic vehicle. The bill, of course, that we're looking at goes to 20.
Except in the high growth counties.
That's true. And then basically some reductions at the upper end, some increases in the middle range. The last thing then, the last page, Exhibit 12, is the recommended flat fees. And according to his model, essentially the current rates, current fees are responsible for some subsidy. Those vehicles that are opting that treatment, and it is an optional treatment, they can always be taxed under the weight mile tax, are on average across all vehicles that make those elections paying less than their cost responsibility, so you see some fairly big increases. What you might notice is missing there is the fourth category of flat fee, namely farm vehicles. There was absolutely no data in DMT which could be identified as a farm vehicle, and therefore the contractor had no basis for finding a fee for that category. And that suggests we might want to eliminate that flat fee.
Okay, thank you. Now, the amendments that you brought to us the other day on 2082 reflect this most recent cost allocation study and the rates contained
herein. They do.
Okay.
Let me respond again to Representative Mercury raised a very good question there. If you look at the road use assessment fee, which is the next to the last table back there, Exhibit 10.
Mm-hmm.
The major problem with that table was the five-axle group, which is now missing. Okay? And the reason is it's almost impossible, first of all, to legally get a load above 98,000 pounds on five axles. And again, there was no BMT data in that area. So rather than extending the curves that are used to determine these rates to the five axle and getting some funny numbers, we just eliminated that group. And I think I commented before, if you try to compare the 100,000 upper bound, 102, 104 with weight mile tax rates, you find these are slightly higher. And that's as they should be, because the weight mile tax rates are based on operating weight at a registered weight. And on average, the operating weight will be less than the registered weight. But when you're dealing with a road use assessment fee, the average load tends to be very close to the registered weight.
Okay, any questions on that? I know that you and others have spent an enormous amount of time on this, and we appreciate all the work that you've done. Thank you. What else do we have here?
We have, if you want to continue with 2082, we have, let's go to 3344.
3344.
Oh.
You've directed your head to another committee for a while. So
okay. 3344, you should have an array of the amendments.
We all have this little chart.
Yeah, it was at the back of the stuff I was being passed around today.
Does everybody have a chart that looks like this?
I've got it right on the bottom of this pack of stuff. 2019 or something.
What does it look like on the front? It has a bunch of X's and shaded lines.
Sure. I also think it looks like an X.
No, I
didn't.
It was
right after the
30.
Nope.
Nope.
Mr. Chair?
Did you get it?
Did Representative Rasmussen say she had an extra stack?
Yeah, but I just handed it to the chair.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because Bill's trying to obtain a stack off.
Okay. I got mine.
It's you got handed out this huge pile of amendments.
3344.
Yeah, 3344 and 2082 and... somewhere at the bottom of the pile, especially the 2082 of this chart.
They were in some piles and others. Let's keep going.
Seems to be some paper involved.
I believe we got through we got through all the amendments. All the amendments. You now have one additional amendment.
Okay.
3344A30. And this is proposed by OTA. It's an additional adjustment to the registration fees that are paid by certain types of vehicles. So if you look at your bill on page 25, you have those reductions for those cases where vehicles pay the fixed fee and maybe a portion of the variable fee or no variable fee at all. Then in 11A where you're dealing with
You're looking at page 30 amendment.
I know. I'm just never mind, now I have my chart again.
We're inserting at line 32 then some language which says vehicles that are registered by an individual or business whose principal activity involves waterworks construction and who is and who is licensed under certain sections of the statute. What's this then?
You don't know.
What it does is move that group of vehicles then into out of the 10 registration tables and into the registration table for charitable vehicles, tow trucks, and vehicles used to transport manufactured structures. So it essentially reduces the fees from the fees which might apply depending upon weight in the table above, which begins on page 24, and moves them into the second table beginning on page 25. So it would drastically, essentially reduces them to what are current registration fees if they're above $26,000.
What does waterworks construction, what does that mean?
Well, Bill. Okay. My understanding.
Okay.
All right, that's the last amendment, so I think we can go to the array here of amendments. What I tried to do here is to list the amendments in order and then the sections that they've amended, also as you move progressively through the bill. That's not totally true in the first case. The new cost responsibility you had two amendments there, one proposed by Representative Merkley, which is sort of substantive, if you remember, in the Dash 4, and direct cost responsibilities, and then a policy statement in the A26 amendments. So those are, I suspect you could do both of those. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, but they do sort of address the same topic.
Right, and then you also gave us a citation out of the current statutes here, too.
Yeah.
That says somewhat the same, but it is not nearly as specific. It just says number and types of vehicles that use the system and their frequency.
Right. Okay. Then the department may want to speak to the A8 amendments and the A14 amendments, I think, in terms of whether or not they want to pursue those issues in this bill or try to pursue them in 2190. They are basically issues that relate to bonding and the movement into this bill of the provisions for collection of fuel taxes.
Right.
Then moving to the A9 amendments, those dealt essentially in Section 19 with the department's ability to audit records. I don't know if you want to go back through these amendments each time.
I don't think we need to. Yeah, okay. I think this helps put them where they belong. Now.
And then in Section 20, again, with the reports that are required, this is mostly a clarification, I think, in the sense that it says, in the first two sections, it specifies when fuel suppliers are going to report and when users of dyed fuel are going to report. And then it sort of says the department can determine, you know, when other people are going to report. And it cleans that up to say all other licensed persons would have to report, and the department is going to determine the reporting frequency for those people or, in fact, whether or not they have to report. But does not give them authority to override the first two subsections.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Williams, I'd just like Mr. Verona to have to wake up. If I have to listen to this, I think the rest of us ought to be forced to do so. Oh, yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
You can bring your water pistol.
I'm rubbing hands.
I think Mr. Groner shows a great deal of survival skills. His previous experience as a state legislator clearly shows.
Moving then to the A16 amendments, there's been absolutely no controversy on those, allowing LRO access. Just kidding. A11s then deal with, in Section 23, with the penalty, late payment of penalties and interest. Okay, that was a section where, because the payment date is changed to the end of the month, you don't want to impose two penalties simultaneously, one being a 1% penalty and the other being 10, and this just makes it one 10% penalty.
I think we need to go back on item by item.
Okay.
Because we did that the other day, and Bob also went over.
Right.
Why don't you just talk about where we've got either ors kind of.
Okay, the next one is an either or choice. In Section 33, with respect to tax refunds, you have the A12 and the A15. I'm sorry, that's not an either or choice.
Right.
They both apply to the same, but you can do either one. The road use assessment fee in Section 42, you have essentially two different amendments there. The bill cites a reference to ORS 818.010. That turns out not to be workable. And the amendments would, the first set of amendments, I believe the A16s, would substitute $3 per ton over 98,000 pounds.
Which ones do that?
17, I believe.
Okay.
The 17s are in this section?
Yes.
They're not marked for this section.
We're in Section 42.1.
Oh, I see. You just sort of said there's not, they both apply and we're moving forward to the next one.
And that, okay, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I confused you. But we're dealing with Section 42.1, Road Use Assessment Fee. Two sets of amendments, A-17 and A-21. The A-21 picked up essentially the contractor's recommendation for dealing with the road use assessment fees, which is to put a table. It's the table he recommended, and would put that into this bill, even though there are no other aspects of the bill which are really trying to incorporate the results of the highway cost allocation study. There is a third choice, which I did not arrange to have prepared but suggested the other day, and that is to simply restore the original language, leave it as an easel pass. But again, that's an either or. You've got to do one or the other there. Moving to the next column then, Section 43, dealing with trip permits. You just happened, because of a lack of communication, I guess, between ODOT and myself, to get two separate amendments there. Both reduce the trip permit, which is $42 for a five-day permit. They both reduce it to a three-day permit. One of them also provides for a one-day permit at $15. The other does not provide a one-day permit. The amendments in A28, I'm suggesting, were, I got confused and intended to draft those for the other bill,
mm-hmm.
not be in this bill.
Okay. That's the deal.
Again, at 45, 10E, reduced fees. You have the new A30 amendments. These are really not in conflict. You can adopt both if you choose. The next conflict is in Section 81, which deals with the tax rate adjustments should the actual revenues deviate from estimated revenues. There you have a first sort of minimal change recommended by ODOT, which is to move everything back 1 month, because the time required, one, to notify people, the rack, essentially, that the price has changed, and all the way down to the pumps, that the amount of tax included in the fuel has got to be changed, and secondly, because of the delay in when the actuals are known. June 30th is the end of the month of June. Fuel will have moved over the rack during that month, and tax will be owed on that. The fuel supplier who's going to pay the tax has until the end of July, last day of July, to report that. And then, so in August sometime, the department is getting in the paperwork and the checks, and they can begin to sort of figure out what actuals is for the first 6 months. So they need to move them back 1 month. The other is to substitute a totally different procedure, which simply says that the first procedure deals only with diesel fuel tax. The second deals with the total amount of money that's paid by the heavy vehicle sector. It requires the governor to essentially determine whether or not heavy vehicles are paying their fair share, and if not, either over or under, to come back to the next legislature with a recommendation as to how registration fees and fuel taxes should be adjusted so that the heavy vehicles do meet their cost responsibility share.
And that's in which one? Either 18 or 13.
Yeah, right. 18 or 13. I believe that's 18.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Russell has one other suggestion, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Russell. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Trucking Association. Last Friday when we were discussing this, I asked for the weekend to review the A4s and the A26s, which deal with cost allocation. Our preference would be the A4s, Representative Merkley's amendment, although we would ask that you consider instead of having the Department of Administrative Services conduct the study, that the Legislative Revenue Office conduct the study. And perhaps, as Representative Murphy's amendments, it says study results have to be reported by February. Maybe we could move that back to January like we have in the other set of amendments. I think it would be nice to have the cost allocation study as soon as possible when the session begins, so we're not in the same situation that we are this time. The document that was just passed out to you would implement the cost allocation study results in House Bill 3344. Basically, it is a new set of registration fees that reduces the registration fees based on the cost allocation numbers that Mr. Yates provided on Thursday. So it's basically doing the same thing in 3344 that you are doing in 2082. With the exception, 2082 also has an increase. My understanding of how that would work is, and that as these bills move through the system, and there will be conflict amendments that would affect the last bill and would adjust the registration fees again to reflect whatever increase in taxes was actually passed by the legislature. And again, I would like to state for the record that the trucking industry is in support of 2082. We're okay with the Dash 18 amendments at this particular time.
Oh, yeah, we moved beyond those. What did we do? Thank you, Bob. Dick, do you want to talk about this in relation to what your revenue impact is?
Yeah, you should have before you a revenue impact statement. And what I've done in this case is to, on the first page, outline what's in the bill. So you've got three sections there, really. The increase in the diesel fuel tax, which replaces the weight mile tax, the increase in registration fees, and in both sections I've tried to outline the special cases or special treatments. And then in the third case, the question of moving the point of collection to the rack. And then to get at the revenue impact of that, you notice there's no page two there. I've got the model that I'm using right now, a printout from that. And what I've done in the top part there, before lost revenue, part that is headed current law revenue, is basically the forecast that's generated by ODOT, similar to DOS's econometric forecast for the general fund. You have ODOT's forecast of the highway fund. The shaded areas, well, first of all, in basic vehicles, you've got fuel, registration fee, trip permits, and the total basic, and then similar types of categories. The reason for separating out some of those is they're treated differently, and so I want individual amounts. What I get then is for the total heavy vehicles there, amounts ranging from $258 million in 99-2000 to $294 million in 2004-2005. The shaded areas then I subtract out, not because all of those are lost revenue in a sense, but because I estimate the total amount of fuel tax separately, so I have to take out all of the current fuel tax. And then I take out just the registration fees for vehicles, opposed to trailers and also just the registration fees for heavy vehicles, and then I take out the weight mile tax. So essentially, in the lost revenues, the 386 is the sum of the 368 paid by basic vehicles and fuel tax plus 18.9 paid by heavy vehicles. Yes. And then the 18.909 is exactly the same number as the vehicle registration fees. And in that first column, the number for weight mile tax differs. If you move over to the second column and all the rest of the columns, it's exactly the same. The first column, basically the weight mile tax is in effect through December 31st of 99. So when you're looking at the 99-2000 year, you've got weight mile taxes that are going to be received. And so what I did is to take out the first 6 months. Now, you'll get one extra month, and as I thought about this later, but I didn't go back and adjust the table, I think I would take that out at this point. What I did is to take that out later, and we'll come down to that when we get there. But anyway, you need to adjust only for the lost weight mile tax revenues, not the total amount. So then what are the replacement revenues, the new revenue? The fuel tax is $387 million, but $250,000 of that in the first year is actually the 1 cent increase in the diesel fuel tax is paid by basic vehicles. So I have to take that out in terms of heavy vehicle share. Then we've got my estimates of the registration fees, and in this case, a tripling of the trailer registration fees. These are not permit fees, but the actual permanent registration of trailers. Those fees are tripled, and I picked up that additional money. Under the trip permits, I don't pick up the same sorts of adjustments that ODOT and OTA went through in their attempt to arrive at revenue neutrality. Part of the reason for that is I'm getting fuel tax revenues and registration fees based on VMT, amount of miles driven on the road. Now, these trip permits tend, in general, to say, okay, you don't have to pay the weight mile tax or you don't have to pay the registration fees for certain trips, and the new diesel fuel tax trip permit, which is new, also says you don't have to pay the diesel fuel tax if you pay the trip permit. So if you count both, in other words, if you use VMT to come up to the total amount of fuel tax paid, and you add trip permits, then you're counting your double count. So I don't count those trips. Basically, I think, if anything, they're revenue reductions. They're not revenue increases. You'd get more money if they were paying the regular taxes rather than using the trip permits. The road use assessment fee, again, there's so much confusion here. I just use the existing numbers. I don't know what the road use assessment fee is going to generate. It'll be a different amount depending upon how you amend the bill. As it is in the bill right now, it's not workable. I don't know how to program it. Under trip permits, I think I confused you now with referring to the road use assessment fee.
Jumping back up to the
my eyes. To me, bad. What I did is not even consider the road use assessment fee, so there's no new revenue under the road use assessment fee, so the assumption is essentially it remains the same. Okay, coming back to where I was then, under trip permits, the only trip permit I've included there is the continuous trip permit, which would now be issued for anyone traveling over 80,000 pounds, and they would pay an amount which depends on the axles that they're running at. And they would need a trip permit for each configuration that they're going to operate under, but only one permit per year. Again, what I've done here is I can't estimate this with a great deal of confidence from the model, because what I have in the model is everywhere mileage, and this fee is not apportioned. So if a out-of-state vehicle operates only 10% of its miles in Oregon, it still has to pay these fees, these trip permits. So I just used the numbers that ODOT and OTA had agreed to. The weight mile tax, then, is the adjustment I was talking about before. What you have there is two amounts. One is the miles that were driven in December are going to actually be reported and paid for in January. So you've got a big chunk of about $18 million coming in January. And then you've got 3 years, essentially, of audit activity to be worked out. And I've allocated that over 3 years here. Then you've got a diesel fuel tax inventory. I expressed some of my concerns about how much money you're going to actually get, but again, I used the number which is agreed to by OTA and ODOT. Then you get a total revenue, which is new money, which needs to replace the revenue lost up above. And what you see there is a small deficit in the first year, followed by deficits in the order of $35 million in following years. Now, this is not the same concept of revenue neutrality that they've been dealing with, and I'm not suggesting that given the way that they're looking at the bill that they're revenue short. What I'm coming down to now is what I have to do to generate a revenue impact statement. And that says you take current law and you compare how those revenues will be changed if you pass this legislation. Okay. So what I did at the bottom here to give you some idea is to show what the, if you took current law and modified it without adopting a diesel tax, as is in this bill, or without increasing the fees as they are in 2082, you just left it alone, but you incorporated the recommended tax rates by the contractor so that the heavy vehicle share would drop down to the 36.2%. Then there would be these reductions in the amount that should be paid, $7.8 million in the first year, $21, $24 million. And that largely offsets a lot of the revenue shortfall that I'm showing. The other thing that is not in this bill, or not in the revenue analysis, and is in the agreement with respect to what constitutes revenue neutrality, is expenditure reductions by ODOT. Okay. So if those are in the order of $5.7 million, which is what they've been talking about, again, you're getting very close to revenue neutral, and certainly within the types of errors that are likely to be made right now.
2% kicker margin.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thank you. Bob, do you have any response on that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I haven't had the opportunity to see the documents that Dick was just going over, so I know we spent 6 months working with ODOT and AOI and everybody else to come up with a revenue neutral analysis. I know Dick used the new model that we haven't been able to see yet, so I don't know.
Okay, is the director, is she going to be coming back here anytime?
Sure, it's going back. Director Cunnington is down in the Ways and Means office.
Right. Well, I think we have a 10 o'clock for today.
Yeah.
I'd like to have her have a few minutes before the committee before we have to leave and go to the floor, so you can maybe just check and see what her progress is. And I'd like to suggest, Dick, that you get this into amendment form for tomorrow for 3344.
Yes, probably.
Mr. Rosenthal? Certainly.
Thanks. Mr. Ristel, your previous testimony about the amendment, you said that you preferred Representative Merkley's amendment to the version in the A26 about the cost allocation study. And they seem pretty similar, but one difference is that the A26 is due call for a biennial adjustment in the fees that are being paid by trucks. Are you opposed to that provision, or you just don't like the way it's addressed there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, and that language is very permissive in the A26s. And it suggests that the legislature should do something, but it, of course, can't require them to do anything. I think you accomplish the same thing, and it's more clear when you just present them with the study. That was our thought.
Those are my amendments, Bob.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Just a policy.
Chairman?
Hey, Whit.
Bob, do you think it's appropriate to be doing this cost allocation study every 2 years?
Okay.
And how frequently have we done it in the past?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Whit, it varies how frequently we have done them in the past. The federal government does one about every 10 years. Most states do them about every 10 years. Oregon has tried to do a major study every 4 years with an update every 2 years. So Oregon would be the exception at this particular time. Much greater frequency than other folks that do cost allocation studies.
Okay, other questions for Bob?
Turning back to the A26, we've created a mechanism that is implemented for at least a couple of years in adjusting the fuel rates, the diesel tax. Why not create a similar mechanism on the registration fee side?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley, the way the bill is originally written, it goes into effect on January 1, 2000. Registration fees are annual fees. So essentially, you wouldn't be able to adjust it until after January of 2001, when the legislature will be sitting and we can make that adjustment right there. It wasn't necessary to provide a variable registration fee system because they are annual fees in the legislature's back in session. If we adopt the amendments proposed by the Department of Transportation, we're delaying the implementation date of the entire system, well, not quite. We're certainly delaying the implementation date of the diesel fuel tax to July 1st. And the registration fees will actually go into place the previous January, but they will be in a prorated form because the current registration fees would essentially apply between January 1 and June 30th, and the proposed increased registration fees would apply for the balance of the year. So, again, you're going to have the opportunity for the 2001 legislature, hopefully based on an updated and refined cost allocation model, to make the necessary adjustments.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up question.
Yeah, follow-up.
This question is really may require some homework, but if you're able to provide information before tomorrow, it would be helpful. And that is examples of states that have gone from a cost responsibility system through a diesel tax registration fee that have succeeded in maintaining cost responsibility after that transition.
Mr. Chairman, the most recent state to have made the change was the state of Arizona. We did have a witness that came up and testified as to the outcome of that system. The Department of Transportation also did some investigation with the state of Arizona to make sure that the revenue streams, particularly the registration fees, were as expected. Arizona has registration fees in the neighborhood of $4,000 today. So there was some investigation that was done. You might want to ask the Department of Transportation what the results were of their inquiries to Arizona.
Okay.
I might just follow up on that for a moment. Arizona transitioned how long ago?
Chairman, Representative Merkley, it's been about 18 months.
I guess what I'm looking for is evidence. I think I'm less concerned about the short term than the 4, 6, 8 years out. If there are any states that have made this sort of transition that we have a track record for, to show that cost responsibility has been sustained, I think it'd be helpful to see that information.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley, 18 states have gotten rid of their weight distance taxes. But as I mentioned earlier, most states do not do cost allocation studies as frequently as Oregon. Matter of fact, a number of states have never done a cost allocation study. So it's difficult to make that comparison. Plus, the legislatures set the tax rates, and they may or may not implement the results of their cost allocation studies. So it's like comparing apples to oranges. I think Oregon is unique in its approach to transportation funding. We're supporting that, clearly, and the continuation of cost allocation. But you won't find that in other places.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Director Cunningham is back, running between committees. We're the revenue committee.
That makes sense, Mr. Chairman.
Even though we're willing to help you spend it, too.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm wondering if anyone has passed this out to you.
Yes, we do have the letter and the list.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Grace Cronick. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Excuse me, we're talking about 2082 now.
Okay.
We were on 3344, and this was back on 2082.
I should be able to open at the same time. I'm all the task for here.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just ask a question. You asked me to come forward and talk about this letter. Is that where we are right now?
Yes, that's what I would like for you to do.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I put forward this letter at the request of the chairman. It is a list of $725 million worth of projects. I think we need to spend just a little bit of time here explaining to you what it is and what it is not. We normally, if we are talking about a project list, go through the SIP process, and some of the projects that are on this list have been on a prior SIP process, but I worked with the regions and with individual members of the Oregon Transportation Commission. The commission's not had a chance to consider this as a whole. I actually was targeting for $700 million, and I allocated out to the regions the goals based on the targets based on the latest allocation in the SIP for modernization projects. So each region was given a target, which they met. The one exception is in Region 1, where they are $25 million over and know that that needs to be cut by $25 million to meet the target. These projects were developed with criteria in mind that these projects are consistent with the highway plan, the regional and local transportation system plans. So in many cases, these are actually on the local system plans have been called for or are consistent with them. They are constructible within a 5 to 6 year time frame. Consideration was given to large projects that are difficult to fund under the state's now allocation of $54 million for modernization. Once you divide that up between five regions, $54 million doesn't go very far annually. Also, the regions gave consideration to equity, and then they gave priority to highways of statewide significance that are carrying from one part of the region to the other. I asked them to prioritize in their opinions, the regions to prioritize in their opinions with their expertise, the projects. So this is not just a miscellaneous list of projects. Within each region, they are prioritized to the target I gave them. This is the cost to construct these projects as best estimated right now. These cost estimates are probably 1 or 2 years old, number one, but they were for about 98, 99. But I feel pretty good about the fact that the projects have been compared with each other, and that generally speaking, the projects themselves are, not generally speaking, are constructible, that environmental work has either begun or been completed. So the chairman put it to me, what could you actually build? Get out there and go for it. So these are $725 million worth of projects we could build. There are three exceptions for that. One is that the Pioneer Mountain Eddyville, which is the extension of Highway 22. We're rebuilding Highway 22 right now. They're a little nervous on the deliverability within 6 years with the design build authority, which we currently do not have anything exceptional. We've been working with the AGC. That's not, our work there is not complete, but with design build authority, we're comfortable we could construct that. And then on Tualatin and Sherwood and the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, I made sure those were on the list because I wanted them ranked. But they don't fit the criteria in that they're not constructible now. We don't know that they're constructible now because we haven't done the environmental work on them. They're two unique projects that were originally conceived by this institution as toll projects. We still are considering them toll projects. But I included them on the list so that we could continue the environmental work should we actually get some funding and ask that they be ranked by my region, so that we could actually see where they were, because there's a lot of controversy as to how ODOT's treating these. And mostly we're treating them as very large projects that we hadn't, in the past, that we had no funding for, and we were asked not to continue development with our other modernization funds before. I'd also like to point out that we'd have to go through a public process. This is ODOT's best efforts. We're just one player in this process. Local government is extremely important. Business community is extremely important. Legislature is extremely important. And all of those things happen when we go through the normal STIP process. I noticed in the bill, I think the latest draft had it in February of 2000, that we would have an adopted list. We can meet that deadline by the normal way we treat STIP projects, best I can tell. I can also point out these are the cost to construct. Whatever dollar amount you gave, we subtract 10% off, reserve that for the additional work on the right-of-way, the preliminary engineering, and any final environmental work that would have to be done. I have also made a note so that the record didn't look as though we could just whip out $700 million without any impact on the workforce, that currently we are, any work that would come in of this magnitude, we propose a two-thirds, one-third approach to staffing. That doesn't really affect this committee, but I need the legislature to understand that we contract out two-thirds of the work and have some additional staff on for the one-third of it. And then I've also pointed out the design build authority, and then what we call A plus B bidding, which is considerations beyond just low bids, would be helpful to deliver a package of this size. It's not any one project that causes us the problem. It's a package of this magnitude, and having some tools in place that would allow us to do better on the implementation side, because I took very seriously the chairman's charge. You got to build it. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop. Take any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate you making the list. I know it was something that you're not particularly comfortable in doing, and I know that the governor's office has expressed some concerns about this as well, but as you described, we do have a partnership here with the with ODOT, with the Transportation Commission, with the legislature, and it takes all of us working together. And for a number of us who have to take the political heat for raising the gas tax, our way of justifying that to our constituents is by saying, here's what you are going to be seeing on the road. And we're especially excited about the prospect of the bonding, which for a long time, people have been talking about major projects in the Portland area, and it's always, well, we don't have the money because we have so little to do for projects. So if we're able to do this kind of infusion of capital dollars dedicated to projects, and we know what the projects are, I think we can all feel like we're really going to be turning a corner, starting to have an impact on the large amount of unmet needs that we have in modernization. And, of course, the rest of the bill goes on to maintenance and preservation and other aspects of that, including states, cities, and counties. So we really appreciate this, and we want to make sure that the process moves forward. And in our discussions, we have talked about the comfort level of us seeing this list and knowing that these are the projects that ODOT is prioritizing, and these are the things that will be moving forward into the ultimate list that gets delivered by February 2000. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, these are the lists that we move into the process and work with our metropolitan planning partners, our ACT, the Area Commissions on Transportation, the counties, the local governments, ODOT. We have a lot of great technical people, and I stand behind their pledge that they can build these, and this is their priority, but we are greatly aided by the help of the public process. And so this is, I wanted you to know where we stand, and I also wanted the process that we've certified to the feds followed would be followed. And by the process, I believe you set up in your legislation, you allow us to go through that process and have the, all of, I mentioned the governor as well and the commission play their part. So I really applaud you for allowing us to have that public process. But I understand your need to look at what we start with and how we go through our process and what projects are on the table for consideration. If I could, as we go through the public process, there may be some minor changes, good ideas come in. You don't want to hold a public process and say no. And so this is the way we start. But this is what ODOT thinks. This is where we start putting our money. Thank you.
Very good. Are there any questions specifically from the committee? If not, let me just ask you one other question about the other $54 million that is normally used for modernization. It comes through the regular process. Where does that fit into these projects and other top priority project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the end of your packet, you'll see two pages are the draft stip. And the commission meets this week, and should they accept a different version of that, I'll also provide that to you. There'll be some changes that happen. That's what the process is all about. But the $54 million that we have annually to put toward modernization is represented in this four-year stip, State Transportation Improvement Program. And so of this, you'll see totaling here $225 million. This represents the commission's commitment to 4 years' worth of planning for projects. Or project, not planning, building.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I could also, the STIP, when my folks were going through the update for the proposed $700 million, $725, they knew that the STIP, the draft STIP was moving along, so they took that into account. So in terms of allocating funds, it may look like some regions, or not regions, but some counties or areas within a region gets maybe less emphasis. What you find when you consider the STIP itself, the draft STIP that's out there, is we may have just taken care of some needs in those other counties, so some of that regional equity was already taken into account.
Right.
Thank you.
Can I just shift gears for just a second and talk about 3344 with you? There's been discussion about the 2190. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a collection of, or basically authorizing ODOT to be the collector for unpaid diesel taxes.
Of course.
Are you familiar with that?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm not.
Okay. I see somebody who is. Thank you.
I'll just stay there because the knees are going here.
Okay. I just thought since we had you here, we'd just...
Mr. Chairman, we appreciate the opportunity. With me is David Tyler.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dave Tyler, ODOT. We've had discussions with industry and with Mr. Yates, and we're comfortable in dealing with, I apologize, I didn't bring my list of amendments. I think you had the
number. Well, we have the 13 or the, I think I've got this right. Is it 13 or 18? No, it's the 8 or 14.
Right, and those, and Mr. Chair, those two dealt with the bonding issues and the collection issues, I believe, and we're comfortable proceeding with industry to address those through House Bill 2190.
Okay. All right. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you very much. See you all here tomorrow morning.
Just a quick comment about what you got here.
Okay.
You all know.
Oh, in the 2082. Back to 2082.
Back to 2082, yeah. We may need an array here also. We're getting up here. But the last time you had the A18 amendments, which are pretty much getting to the position the chair wanted. In the dash A19, there have been some minor changes, essentially. Well, perhaps not so minor. The main thing I want you to come up to deal with is the changes in the bonding. I essentially talked with Treasury. They were very concerned about the way the bill was written and their ability to even issue bonds. And so I said, okay, give me some language. And we've adopted that into this statute now, which is basically on page 9 in section 19 and on the next page in section 20. And so look at those, and I'm concerned about a few things there we need to work out before we pass this out. Then the rest of the amendments basically just give you some more choice about how to deal with the road use assessment fee. In fact, that's just...
20s are?
Yeah. The 20s are the changed vehicle registration fees for vehicles between 8 and 26,000 pounds. Then the 21 and 22s are two alternative ways of dealing with the road use assessment fee. Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Your turn. I thought you just wanted to talk to me about that. I didn't know you wanted to. Okay. This is 20s or not road use assessment fee. This is 8,000.
Yes.